This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, hello and good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Go and Kusu Chuan.
Guten Morgen.
Guten Morgen. 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 25th of October. Stay with us on The Morning Run today. We're going to take you all the way up to 10 o'clock today, catch you up on all you need to know. We would love to hear from you this morning. 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, some breaking news overnight, guys. Suspected explosive devices have been sent to top Democrats like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, as well as the CNN. So I believe the CNN's New York office had been evacuated yesterday, so just hours ago, after a suspected bomb was sent to their mailroom.
Yeah, it looks like so far news is still coming out from that. We're still waiting to hear more news on it. It looks like a pipe bomb. And some of it comes in like a manila envelope and with several postage stamps. Some of them, the value of the stamps are more than what's needed. And investigators are saying that that's a way to, I guess, for the sender to minimize the package being a red flag. Because sometimes the postage is not enough. They will investigate further at the post office.
Yeah, so I checked the picture out on Google Images. Actually, the pipe, it's like literally a pipe. You know those plastic pipes that you get in your house?
Yeah.
So they're very light.
It's like a handmade one, right?
Correct. Mm. So I presume it's filled with detonite or dynamite of some kind, some explosive.
Shrapnel.
Mm-hmm. And then, so the shrapnel, it's like nuts and bolts and bits of nails and stuff like that. They're just literally sellotaped on the outside of the pipe, and then they're just mailed in a bubble wrap thing to the recipient. So, and then there's a mobile phone, a very cheap Nokia mobile phone, which is sellotaped around the outside of the pipe.
Yeah, I hope you didn't Google this from the office computer, because that might send red flags to whoever's watching IP.
Look, it's as simple as that. It's quite distressing. The thing is, it also sent to George Soros, the investor.
It was.
Right? I think he was one of the first, right?
Yeah, two days ago, it was sent to the home, so his house in New York City. So I wonder whether this is, I guess because the tensions are ratcheting up ahead of the midterm elections.
November 6th.
Yeah, so that's right. So I think, tensions are, I don't know whether this is a manifestation of that, but Donald Trump says that the police are on it. So perhaps we'll find out more details as to who's behind these suspicious packages.
Yeah, this is going to come across really badly, but I'm going to say it anyway. The bombs are sent to the Clintons and the Obamas. They seem to have missed a mark because these two are no longer presidents. It's the current one you've got to be concerned about.
Yeah,
sorry.
Okay. any sentence that starts with, I probably shouldn't say this.
Sorry.
It's probably a sentence you shouldn't say. Okay, well, coming closer to home, we have a big day today. We're watching the KL Sessions Court. This is because the MACC has confirmed that the former Prime Minister, as well as the former Treasury Secretary General, Tan Sri Irwan Siriga, they are going to be charged with committing criminal breach of trust today. We're watching it. It's expected to be at 7:30 this morning. But I guess all eyes will be on the court to see how many charges will be levied upon the two of them.
Yeah, there's news overnight that the MACC raided the house of Tan Sri Irwan Siriga. I think Irwan was taken by a team of five MACC officials in a multi-purpose vehicle to his house at about 4:30 yesterday evening.
It was a quick raid, just 15 minutes, and they just took, I think, one briefcase and two coats belonging to him. Quite a departure from the condominium and pavilion that was connected to Najib.
Sure, I guess, but still preliminary. If you remember, Najib has been investigated by the MACC almost 9 times since he stepped down as Prime Minister. But I think the focus will really be on Irwan Siriga today because, it's been revealed in Parliament how much he was making while he was a civil servant. Apparently, Irwan Siriga earned close to 3 million ringgit during his tenure from January 2011 until June 2018. So in those 7.5 years, this civil servant made close to 3 billion ringgit. Million. That's an M, not B.
Yeah, because it sat on several boards of companies which were connected to the MOF and to the Treasury. But, you know, these numbers kind of like almost pale in, well, they do pale in comparison to the kind of quantums being bandied about where 1MDB and all the other corruption. You know, remember some months ago when the estates of the late Tan Sri Jamaluddin judges, I think his wife or something, or his estranged mum, right?
His mother, yes.
His estate was worth like, was it 2 billion or 1 billion ringgit?
Mm, his mum was, I believe, contesting the estate. Yes, yeah. That's right. Well, we're going to keep you abreast on all the developments that's going to happen later today at the KL Sessions Court. We have reporters on the ground who will be bringing us live updates from there. So make sure you stay with us all the way till 10 o'clock today. But after this, we're going to be looking at something that could whet your appetite this morning, or maybe not. Nasi lemak cheese. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:18 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. That was Arctic Monkeys with 4 out of 5. And 3 out of 3 of us are from Penang. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Girl and Kusuchua.
Absolutely.
And we're looking at nasi lemak cheese this morning. Is it a culinary genius invention, or is it a culinary atrocity? So it turns out that there was this guy on Twitter, Shafiq, who introduced nasi lemak cheese. He put regular, cheese on nasi lemak and heated up so the cheese melted on top. And what was supposed to be, I think, just for his own enjoyment, became viral on social media. It got so many responses, and apparently most people did not like it. So it left a bit of a bad taste in most of the Malaysian netizens.
Yeah, there was nearly 2,000 conversations going on. I want to read out Mystique. It's a Twitter handle for a lady named Nadia Zainal, right? She said, "Hello, police, bomba. JPM, Ruku Tetangga, semua tengok ni dia, letak cheese kat nasi lemak."
So it's funny. Hilarious. Another tweet I saw was, "There is a special place in hell for someone who would put cheese on nasi lemak."
In the first place, Asian people don't eat a lot of cheese.
Yeah, well, many of us are lactose intolerant, right? So I know I am. So I don't know, when I looked at this, I thought, yeah. Oh my goodness, this was a bridge too far for me, because I thought, you know, the nasi lemak ice cream. Have you guys seen the nasi lemak ice cream?
Yeah, that's horrendous.
But I've seen the nasi lemak cake, which I thought was quite a genius invention.
No, go away.
Because it looks like, it is like a nasi lemak. It's just presented like it's a cake.
Right.
But it's a nasi lemak
like the idea of that, because then it feels like there's communal sharing of nasi lemak, right?
Yeah, it's quite yummy. It's quite yummy.
So I did some research on the internet, right? And I found out that the reason why people in China specifically don't have a lot of cheese in their diet is because in the old days, right, the barbarians used to be the ones that ate a lot of cheese. So to have cheese in your diet was seen as something like barbaric or below the social circles, right? There's a second reason. The second reason is that was that cows in the old days were put to work as normal, you know, as Chinese people do, right? They were busy tilling the fields rather than putting themselves to work in the as dairy producers.
Right. So to use them for, you know, as manual. But I guess the question really is, are there some things that should never be done to food, especially food that we consider to be like heritage food, right? So I'm just wondering, mostly lately I've seen a lot of things, really weird things being done to cheese and durians. That's almost a weird variation of durian in every shape and form, like durian coffee.
Yeah. Durian ice cream.
Durian cakes. A friend of mine makes banoffee cakes, which I've had like a musang, very expensive, like for 15 ringgit per cake, right?
Durian pies,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess whether we are open to that. And why is it that we're open to other fusion food as opposed to this? I personally love the kind of Asian take on Italian food. I love the chili padi
right?
In spaghetti.
Yes.
You know, when you make it spicy, the tom yum spaghetti. We've replaced noodles with spaghetti, with pasta. And why is it that we're accepting of that as opposed to nasi lemak cheese and the like?
Because we're the ones distorting VR recipes. So I have an Italian restaurant near my house, near Via Prairie, right? So the owners are two Italian brothers. You should see the nose he crinkles when I ask him for chili powder to put on my pasta and my pesto. Yeah. He gives me the most horrendous Southern Italian stare. As if, well, you know, some travesty on his mother's recipe.
Right, but I think you're excused because you're not native Italian. This is like Malaysians doing
that's
this
right,
to other
right.
Malaysian food.
It's a tragedy to add to a tragedy.
Yeah. Well, you have Arif Lukman who says on Twitter, pisang goreng cheese, aku boleh layan. You know, but you know...
Pisang goreng cheese,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite good.
So he's saying
good.
That one okay, but he's saying nasi lemak cheese, a big no. And I hope and pray there's no one proposing rendang ayam cheese.
Speaking of Italian food, Roland Tan is in Rome. He's listening to app. To the BFM on the app. It's just good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hearing you loud and clear. Hey, Roland, good morning, man.
Don't bring chili padi to the Italian restaurant. That's my only advice to you this morning. All right, guys, we're going to come back and take a look at the European Parliament, which has voted for a complete ban on the range of single-use plastics, whether that could work here in Malaysia and whether you would support it. That's coming up in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:40 right now. That was Tom Waite with Downtown Train. Hello and good morning. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Go and Kusu Chuang this morning. Thank you guys for weighing in on WhatsApp and Twitter. We got your messages and we're listening. Now, we were talking a little bit earlier about the recent revelation in Parliament by Lim Guan Eng that the former Treasury Secretary General Tan Sri Irwan Siraga had earned, I believe, close to 3 million ringgit during his tenure from January 2011 to 2018. His last drawn salary for 2017 was 495,000 ringgit, which I believe monthly would be about 41,000 ringgit. And the comments coming in on WhatsApp, we have here Sharif, who says that on Irwan's remuneration, it's about 35K a month. That's not super high for a super senior civil servant with board directors of other agencies as well. So, truly perceptive attempt, merely his opinion. He says, so we are listening to you, Sharif. Thank you for writing in. We also have a tweet from Hiswani.
Hiswani Hassan, yeah. He says, setting aside corruption issues, the salary quantum of the senior civil servant in charge of the finances of the country are commensurate with that role when compared to a CEO of a big corporation that's also benchmarked against counterparts in Australia and the UK. So in Singapore, so I did some research, right? And I think that in the UK, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, which is the top guy in charge of the finance economy, mm-hmm. It's earning about £135,000 a year. So if you take it like for like, then it's not comparable. Well, obviously, the UK makes a lot less. Mm-hmm. But if you multiply that by 6.5, it's still only about 900,000 ringgit. So, you know, so I mean, obviously, the other point to note is also the fact that Irwan Siraga is in the civil service. He's not in the private sector. So mm-hmm. you can't compare like for like. Because in the bank, in the private sector, you can make a lot more.
Mm, well, if you compare to Singapore, our neighbours, the annual norm salary for an entry-level minister, that's about 1.1 million Singaporean dollars. Mm. And that's a mix of a fixed income and variable. So they have performance bonuses, national bonus, and all that, which is great. You know, you have that mix. But the total for just a norm, the annual normal salary, entry-level, that's the level we're talking about here, 1.1 million Singaporean dollars.
All right, well, keep them coming, guys. 018-789-8899 is the number to WhatsApp in or to tweet us. Our handle is at BFM Radio. Now, we also have news that the UMNO president, Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi, he's going to be kicking off a national tour tomorrow to address some of the concerns that grassroots supporters have about his leadership, and he wants to maintain his innocence from the corruption charges against him. So if you recall, I believe he has about 45 charges. He was charged last Friday with 45 counts of money laundering, abuse of power and criminal breach of trust involving more than 114 million ringgit.
Yes, so the question here is, right, are national tours, you know, if you do these kind of go down to the ground, go talk to people, do you think that's going to be effective? And you know what makes an effective campaign? I think if you look at previous examples, like, for example, I remember Arukanda.
Yeah, during the G14 Turama circuit.
Yeah, he had a number of roadshows. He went down to the ground. I think he did some 30-odd plus roadshows. He said, if I read back on this NST article, May 8th, Arukanda actually said that, you know, the 1MDB roadshow was a success. People are accepting and they know real issues now.
How do you know if it's a success?
Yeah, exactly. That's my point.
Well, at the time, he thought it was a success.
He, that's coming from him, right?
That's rich, yeah.
But the results show otherwise. Mm. May 9th results show otherwise that perhaps it wasn't as big of a success as he thought it was.
Yeah, the trouble with these roadshows is that when you visit the rural folk, right? Now, obviously, there is a digital divide between the kampongs and the cities. You're talking to people who are essentially a little bit divorced from, you know, from the goings and the comings and goings of the news headlines, right? You're talking to people whose lives are by and large immersed in their daily routines.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not so immersed in the news headlines or the development. So they're a little bit of an easier audience, do you know what I mean? So for you to put forward a compelling case is not difficult.
Actually, Chuan, I think a lot more people are getting online right now, and it's because of technology.
Yeah.
The awareness of issues on the ground is more apparent now, be it in the kampong or in urban areas. And in fact, Mel, coming back to your question on whether, how do you find out whether
it's successful or not?
So in this article, NSD, Arukanda said, you know, they would applaud at the end, and there would be people who come up to me and exchange phone numbers. So I guess in this case, okay, he's saying he thought
this guy was running 1MDB.
This is an NSC story. It's May 8th.
I can read so many things into that, you know. But here's the thing, right? When I think about a campaign, there's something about, you know, an agenda pushing thing that I don't like about going to the campaign. But we often, and here on the Morning Round, we say this too, we often want our leaders to go down on the ground more to hear. So, you know, there's always this accusation of elitist politics, of being detached or divorced from reality, from what people are saying and suffering on the ground. So don't we want that? Don't we want our leaders to come down to the ground and really talk to grassroots members about what it is that they're feeling, what it is their concerns? Maybe if a little bit more of that happened before GE14, they wouldn't have been so surprised with the results.
Yeah, timing.
Yeah, you're right, Mel. And there's very little that one can say to dispute the wisdom or the reality of such a campaign. I guess in response to what I would say is that a lot of the governments we have in the world today are by and large elected representatives, as in a lot of them go through a beauty contest in the campaign period before in an election. And it really depends on what kind of things they can say to hypnotize the audience, for want of a better word, and what kind of resources they can throw at this beauty contest.
Mm-hmm.
There is a strong kind of like school of thought now would suggest that the government or country should be run by a bunch of people, not a prime minister, not a president, and thereby reducing the impact of a beauty campaign by someone with large amounts of resources at his disposal or her disposal.
Yeah, and the thing is also, to your question, Mel, it's for me, it's timing and also how sincere you are when you go down to the ground, how sincere you are to want to listen to feedback.
Opposed to it being a one-way communication.
And whether people ask you questions, would you answer or are you going to deflect?
Okay, it's 6:47 right now. We want to hear from you. Do you think these types of roadshows or campaigns are effective in getting your message across or listening to people? 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to come back with more on this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:53 right now. You're with The Morning Run, Joyce Chuang and Mel here with you. Foxy Lady by Jimi Hendrix. Chuang doing a bit of a groove there in the studio.
Jimi Hendrix, man.
You can't help yourself, can you?
Dead too young at 27 years old, just like Janis Joplin.
Oh, yeah. And was it Kurt Cobain as well?
Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. In their 20s. Okay, we're taking a look at some of the messages that are coming in. Thank you guys for your messages this morning. Ro on WhatsApp is saying, roadshows only work if people turn up. And most Malaysians only turn up for free food. And that's changing. We're now hungry for answers and accountability, as Arukanda found out in Bangsa. Great point there. Of course, we were talking a little bit earlier about the fact that Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi, who is the UMNO president at the moment, he is going to be embarking on a national tour tomorrow to speak to grassroots members of the party and to, I guess, maintain his innocence after being charged with 45 counts of criminal breach of trust last Friday.
Yeah, so we're talking about how effective, I mean, we're questioning whether or not, you know, such campaigns can be effective, as we look to previous examples like what happened with Arukanda. Actually, I think YB Tony Paul also had a roadshow on 1MDB,
mm-hmm.
and Rafizi as well with his Invoke Road campaign.
That's right. I think this was just during the campaign period. But Sassy on WhatsApp says, James Sassy, he says that if Zaid Hamidi is innocent as he claims, then there should be no reason for a roadshow. Just produce proof in court. All these roadshows are nothing but a circus to entertain.
Yeah, you know, look, I take this news with a bit of with a bit of an odd feeling, right? Because obviously Zahid Hamidi is facing 45 counts of charges, as you say. Should he be allowed to go on this roadshow? I mean, I don't think there's legislation which exists.
Mean whether it's ethical?
Well, ethical is one side. Whether it's right and proper that he should be another. Because obviously there is the legal process, and then there's the court of public opinion.
Uh-huh.
If he might have a resounding success on this campaign, on this roadshow. If, for example, then social media starts to support him, does this disrupt the legal process?
Right,
is what I'm asking.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Because isn't there a media gag on Dato Sri Najib's case?
There was.
So what makes this one different?
Yeah, something along those lines. It's just something that doesn't quite smell right here.
Well, we spoke to political analyst O Isan a couple of days ago, and he made an interesting comment about Dato Sri Zaid Hamidi, and I guess the support that he's getting from UMNO supporters. We wanted to know what are the motivations of UMNO supporters in maintaining the faith and support to the party president.
For those who support UMNO, it's not so much actually about whether the party has a good image or not. It's whether the party could continue as it did over the last half century to deliver the sort of largesse or goodies to its supporters. So as long as UMNO can still manage to do so with its sizable, for example, party assets and so on, UMNO, I think, would still be very much a player in the political arena of this country.
That was political analyst O Isan, and I think he has a point here, because the reason there's been kind of a split of, you know, this factionalism within UMNO itself, and many UMNO grassroots supporters are questioning the leadership of Dato Sri Zaid Hamidi since May 9th elections, right? They want to know what's the way going forward. And I think that they're not satisfied with the communication and the lack of, I guess, clarity in terms of where UMNO is heading. So coupled with the fact that UMNO no longer controls the purse strings in Putrajaya, whether there will be, you know, the same kind of largesse as O Isan pointed out, whether the same kind of goodies and sweetness will be given to sweeten the deal, to sweeten the ground for support. And maybe this is his way of making sure that he doesn't lose that support by actually giving face time to grassroots supporters.
Yeah, and of course he would, because, I mean, by and large, for many Malaysians, right, the struggle, I mean, our focus is on making ends meet, getting from day to day, paying the bills and feeding the family on time. That is what we're most concerned about for most Malaysians. You know, when you're up against the wall, you're only concerned about these things for your family. And it's, I guess, for Zahid to come out to the countryside to say these things, and for O Isan to point out this fact, he's probably right.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably right, and that's what it's probably why he'll find some kind of like a resonance among the audience, right? And if he does get the support from the groundswell, it might be for the wrong reasons. Do you know what I mean? Because the larger picture here is the integrity of the country.
Sure.
And the trust we have in our politicians. They shouldn't be supported because of the goodies that they have been giving in the past
or the expectation of these goodies.
Mm. Well, I guess it's the culture and it's been ongoing for so long now. But sometimes even if they take the goodies, the question is whether or not you will get, that's a two-way street, whether or not you get their support. I mean, they could be there just to take the goodies,
yeah,
you know?
Perhaps.
We have Muhammad Isa Sama on WhatsApp weighing in, and he's saying that he's laughing at this notion of the roadshow. How is Dato Sri Zaid Hamidi going to explain the 45 charges slapped on him in detail during this roadshow? And that's a good point there, because it's not like it's complicated like the 1MDB case. There's really no need to explain the convoluted transactions, or it's not as complex as 1MDB. So I guess that's the question here. All right, we've got the 7 o'clock news bulletin coming up next with Sabrina Magdalene, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.